You are listening to the Social Work Me podcast with your host, Matt Barnes, and this is episode 21. And I have an amazing guest on the show, as always, and his name is Mark Maselli. And I think we actually became best friends after doing this interview. And you will find out why. I think we have a few things in common, and one of the big things that we have in common is a desire and a goal to make clients feel comfortable, to create safety, and to provide really effective services outside of a counseling office. And so Mark shares his path from Windsor, Ontario to Sydney, Australia, and some great stories along the way that have led him to work for an amazing organization called Waves of Wellness, which combines group therapy with surfing. And on this episode, Mark shares a lot of great tips and wisdom on how to provide group therapy, on specific interventions that have been useful for the Waves of Wellness organization. Mark really breaks down how to build trust and engagement with clients and how to create emotional safety and all kinds of really important aspects of clinical social work that can be done in a whole lot of different environments outside of the traditional office. If after the show you feel like you want to reach out to Mark to maybe apply for a job like I immediately thought of after doing this interview, I'm going to leave a link to contact him in the show notes. And as always, if you like the show, give us a rating. Some feedback is always appreciated. And check us out on Instagram and Facebook just under Social Work Me Podcast. Before we get to the show with Mark, just some words from our sponsor, Owl Practice. Are you trying to move away from paper files but having trouble finding an online solution? Owl Practice can help. Owl is an entirely web-based practice management solution that can take you away from paper files for good. You can store all of your client data, session notes, and forms virtually in your account, backed by our secure Canadian servers. All Social Work Me listeners will get their first month free with Owl using the promo code SocialWorkMe. So head over to owlpractice.ca/socialworkme.php for all the details. This episode is brought to you by Rebel Office. It's an online resource center for entrepreneurs, including mentorship, strategy building, and graphic and web design services. To get in touch with Rebel Office about elevating your practice, visit rebeloffice.ca. And finally, this podcast would only be possible with the support of Southwest Counseling Services in Sarnia, Ontario. All right, let's get to the show with the amazing guest, Mark Maselli.
How does that make you feel?
Don't social work me.
With a fellow Ontario social worker, so I'm pumped to connect with you, Matt. I've been listening to the show for maybe about a few months now. It's been really, really cool hearing a little bit more about the social work space in Ontario, because I've been so disconnected from that in the last 7 years.
Yeah. And I'm so happy you reached out. And I don't know if you ever listened to the first episode of the show, but I talked about one of my proudest, most favorite moments of being a therapist was doing a session in an ice fishing hut while we caught fish. And then you reached out and, you know, come to find out that you're combining therapy and surfing. And I love what you're doing. So I'm really excited to hear more about it.
Totally. I had to, I definitely wanted to shoot you a message and just say you had some listeners in Australia, because my impression was, how long have you been doing the podcast for?
It's been just over a year.
Cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
And it was really by coincidence that I had found it. I was searching social work podcasts and I think the logo caught my attention, and then I saw Sarnia, Ontario, and I thought, oh, this is definitely something I want to tune into. So, awesome. Yeah, it's great to connect.
Yeah. So I guess you're not from Ontario then, but you went to school in Windsor. Let's just start off. Tell us about your path. Cause I mean, from the surface, it looks like University of Windsor grad,
ends up in Australia, but maybe that's not the case. So tell us about your path.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in just outside of Windsor, a small town called Tecumseh. We're about 30 minutes outside of Windsor. So yeah, born and raised in Ontario, studied my MSW at the University of Windsor, graduated in 2012. And yeah, kind of, I guess how I've got into social work is in high school, really quite unsure about what I wanted to do. Knew about social work mostly through a friend of the family that ran a community service and did some volunteering with them, and really loved the variety of work that you could have with social work. And I think that's something that really attracted me to want to pursue it as a career. I knew I wanted to work with people and wanted to be in some kind of helping profession, and just felt that social work could give me that variety of different landscapes that you could work in. And that's really what got me attracted to social work. So, grew up, yeah, in Tecumseh. I absolutely fell in love with the water from a young age. I was lucky enough, my grandparents had a place right on Lake St. Clair. So I would spend a lot of the summers as a little kid, like water skiing. And then as I got older, wakeboarding and kiteboarding on the lake, and worked as a lifeguard to pay for uni as I went through school, and just loved everything about being around the water. And when I graduated with my MSW out of University of Windsor, I really was at a bit of a crossroads where I had someone I went to school with who was actually working in Australia as a social worker, and I had connected with them and chatted with her about what it's like. She was working in Perth at the time, and chatted to her about that process, and really that's what planted the seed for me to think I would love to live in a country like Australia, because you have that access to the water all year. Whereas in Ontario, as you know, past September, it gets pretty icy in the lakes. So that kind of that passion to find a place where I could be in the water year round drove me to, I guess, explore Australia a little bit more and do a lot of that research just as I was finishing up my MSW.
That's awesome. So I graduated 2011 from University of Windsor. So just, we almost crossed paths.
Are you a Windsor grad as well?
I am. Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah. So I was the year before you.
Far out.
Crazy. And had you been to Australia before? This was the first time, like heading out there was the first time.
Yeah, it was the first time. I had another close friend that was living in Sydney. He was going to dental school at the time, and I was chatting with him openly about what's Sydney like, what is it like to live in Australia, and it was all really positive things that I was hearing. And during that kind of planning phase and thinking, you know, could I really do this? Like, could I move to the other side of the world and just give this a shot? He was a really helpful contact to just understand the logistics. But when I kind of decided to just give it a go, I applied for what was called it's a working holiday visa. It's a 1 year visa that you can, as a Canadian, come to Australia and work to subsidize your travel costs for the year. So I didn't have a job lined up before I came over on that visa. But I very much intended on coming here for that year and trying to work in the social work field, in mental health, if possible. And luckily enough, I found a job within the first couple months of coming over.
And was that with Waves of Wellness?
No. So it's a pretty funny story how I got my first role, actually. So it was... it was with the NGO called Anglicare, and the role was a community mental health case manager. And their office was probably 50 meters from Bondi Beach. It's a popular beach in Sydney. And my first day there, I was walking around with my brother. Actually came to Australia with me at the time. So he had finished school to become a teacher. And at the time, it was really challenging to find, get a teaching role in Ontario. So he came over with me, and he's actually still over here living in a different city in Melbourne, working as a teacher. But my brother was with me, and I saw just a sign, and there was a building, and it just said community services. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. I'm going to look that up and see if they have any jobs available. They didn't have anything available online at the time. So the next day, I actually just went and knocked on the door and spoke with them and introduced myself as a social worker from Canada and chatted a little bit about my experience and that I'd be really interested if they had any positions. And sure enough, they had something in the pipeline, and I had an interview a few weeks later. And the manager of that service really advocated for me to stay. And there was a few hoops they had to jump through employing a non-Australian, but I was really fortunate at getting that role and that really being my kind of foot in the door to learn about mental health services in Australia and the different systems compared to what we have in Ontario.
Wow, that's so cool. Well,
it was it pays to knock on the door. Sometimes you got to do it the old-fashioned way.
Strap on your boots and show up with your tools.
That's right.
No, that's great. So it was like, I guess, really taking a risk going to Australia without a position and then just kind of hitting the ground once you got there. I want to hear about Waves of Wellness because it sounds like such a cool foundation that you're a part of. In 2009, before I went and did my master's, I was over in Australia. So I've had some personal experiences over there and just love the country, and there's so much to do there. And I guess right now is your summer, right? Like, you guys are right in the best time of the year.
That's right. A hot Christmas is something I'll never get used to. This is Southern Hemisphere, so this is our summer. We're looking at, actually this past weekend we had some pretty hot 30-35 degree days. So essentially it's the polar opposite of what's happening in back home in Ontario. So when you guys are in the nice warm weather, I'm cold, albeit it's, you know, 15. It's not too bad.
That's awesome. So let's talk about Waves of Wellness.
Yes, Waves of Wellness.
Yeah. Can you kind of give us the breakdown of what it's all about? Maybe, you know, some of the programs and the clientele and what you guys do.
Absolutely. So Waves of Wellness is it's a mental health charity in Australia, founded in 2017 by an occupational therapist and a health public health epidemiologist. And it is really all about using surfing as a tool to promote positive mental health with individuals that are struggling with their mental health, but also we also provide prevention-based programs for the general public that teaches them skills on how to better manage their mental health so that when they are going through a hard time, they have those skills. Now, Waves of Wellness is, we've supported just over 1,200 participants to date. And we are all about combining traditional talk therapies in a group setting. So we run groups of 10 participants. Either a 6 or an 8 week course that incorporates that 30-40 minutes once a week of a mental health group discussion topic. And that ranges from self-esteem, problem solving, managing change, mindfulness. So we have different topics each week. And following those topics are facilitated by our Waves of Wellness staff that are allied health professionals. So they're either trained social workers, occupational therapists, psychologists, or counselors, and they double as surf instructors. So the second part of what we offer is a learn to surf lesson. So paired with that group discussion, the participants then have their wetsuits on, they get in the water, and they actually participate in a learn to surf lesson, which is delivered by that group facilitator. So you can imagine the, I guess if you picture the setting is we're outside, we're at a beach. So that's already a massive win for a lot of the participants that we're working with, is we're getting them outside, we're getting them into quite a positive environment, a positive space. We're having a meaningful discussion around mental health, and they're able to, I guess, in a very natural and laid back way, our facilitators approach these discussions in a way that I guess is very different to that traditional clinical setting that you might get in a hospital or in a, you know, four walls kind of traditional setting. And participants are able to let their guard down a little bit more. They're able to share, but also if they just want to sit and listen, that's cool too. There's not that pressure to always contribute. And then you have the added benefit of actually getting into the water, getting some physical activity, getting some vitamin D, and doing all of that in a very safe and supportive environment is really what Waves of Wellness is all about. So to date, we've had, we have about 11 facilitators across Australia, and we're running at 6 different locations in the country. So it's really is about combining surfing and that traditional mental health support.
Man, I love it. That's so cool. when I was doing some prep for this and just kind of looking up, you know, Waves of Wellness and some articles about you showed up, it was really interesting to see that I think it was Windsor that posted an article that kind of talked about your work as a student, as an MSW student in Calderwood's direct practice class.
Did you have Calderwood?
I did.
Yes, she's great.
It kind of mentioned that you've always had this idea, at least from grad school, of getting clients out of the office.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wrote a paper about essentially about how I felt if I was a client in a traditional, I guess, counselor or social worker, you know, role seeking help, I would find it quite uncomfortable to be sitting face to face with someone who has a pen and paper and is just making notes about my life. And in that paper, I wrote about how, like, I felt there needed to be a shift in the way that support is delivered to people, and that setting is not conducive to a strong therapeutic alliance with the clinician, and that we should be looking at, you know, going on nature walks or playing basketball or, you know, incorporating some kind of activity with the conversations that we're having, because they can get, you know, quite intense or quite deep. And I think setting up an environment like that is more conducive to those conversations happening in a natural way. And that was, so I had written a paper about that, and yeah, the Calderwood, we've kept in touch a little bit, and she encouraged me to just share my experience about, you know, what I'm doing in Australia and how, you know, that you can do that very clinical work in a not so clinical space.
I think it's so great that this was something that came to life, you know, in grad school, but that you followed it through, right, you know, all the way to Australia. I think that's amazing that you've been able to kind of complete that from research and, you know, writing papers on it to, you know, carrying it out in practice. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And I'm very fortunate. I think it's a combination of kind of trusting your instincts and doing, you know, I guess exploring what you want out of life and kind of taking that dive sometimes. Like the dive for me was really moving to another country and not having employment lined up. And, you know, I think my parents were were a little bit like, oh, what's he doing? Like, how's this gonna pan out? But also very fortunate that I've been able to link up with an organization like Waves of Wellness in the early days and meeting. I had met Waves of Wellness CEO Joel through that original community mental health role that I had with Anglicare and got connected with an organization called One Wave and just was like, wow, this is so cool. Like, this is, this is exactly what I envisioned and what I would love to be involved in. So I was very fortunate enough to be involved with Waves of Wellness in those early days, and really fell in love with everything that they represented and the change that they wanted to make in terms of a bit of an innovative type of program.
That's great. And, you know, and now that you're actually doing the work, and I guess it sounds like you're a program manager, but I imagine you're still meeting with clients, or are you still on the ground, so to speak, in terms of delivering services?
In the last 12 months, I've stepped more away from the direct group facilitation. That's been a primary part of my role over the last few years. But now the focus of my role as a program manager is really supporting the other clinicians in that group facilitation, the program planning, some of the grant sourcing funds, and a bit more of the back end side of things. But I still do site visits and pop into our different program sites and train our new staff and all that kind of stuff. I guess if we take a step back and think about the sequence of events. So I was working with Anglicare in the community mental health role, worked for then about a year doing one-on-one clinical. It's a system here they call the NDIS, which is the National Disability Insurance Scheme. And it's an interesting funding model or scheme. I don't know if have you heard about it, Matt?
No. And when I hear the word scheme, I don't know, it has a negative connotation for some reason. But so, yeah, I'm interested if you can explain it a bit.
It's essentially moving away from block funding community services and providing funds to an individual. So if you're someone that has the terminology in this, again, is terrible. It's severe and persistent mental health challenges. You get an X amount of funding that you can spend on services as you wish as a participant of the NDIS. So I worked providing one-on-one, more of that traditional like clinical one-on-one work in community mental health for about a year, as well as working as a team leader to supporting some of the other case managers. And then that's when I then transitioned to Waves of Wellness. And that's when I started really facilitating on the sand and getting that experience working with them and supporting the development and rollout of the programs at WOW.
Gotcha. Wow. And let's talk a little bit about your frontline experience with Waves of Wellness. When you look back at kind of how you viewed traditional talk therapy as an MSW student, some of the things that you had talked about, like, you know, the difficulty with sitting down, talking to somebody, taking notes, how uncomfortable that might feel for clients. What did you find as a facilitator actually doing this really progressive outside of the box way of delivering mental health service?
Yeah, good question. I mean, the environment helps big time, right? So with Waves of Wellness, we have the benefit of being able to hold these sessions at a beach. So I think that for starters is a positive. The other element that helps with engagement is the fact that participants want to be there. They're excited to be there because they're going to go surfing. And that is a bit of the bait, I guess you could say, that we have. And we like to say that the support that we provide is really a health by stealth approach, where it's very much come learn how to surf, learn about well-being, come down to the beach. You're going to meet Mark or Austin or whoever your facilitator is. And right away, their environment's changing. They're getting out of their normal clothes. They're putting on a wetsuit. I have the same wetsuit on. We're all putting on sunscreen. We're chit-chatting at our van in the parking lot. And when we get down to the sand, we're able to, I think regardless of whatever setting you're working in, wherever you're facilitating groups, as a facilitator, you want to really establish what those group norms are going to be. And you want to establish that with the participants in the program early on. And one of the things we say at Waves of Wellness is we're here to have fun. We want you guys as participants, you're coming here to learn to surf, but at the same time, part of who we are and the reason why we do these programs is to talk about mental health and wellness. So that is really a part of the program and part of why you're down here. But also we want you guys to have fun. So talking about mental health doesn't have to be doom and gloom. Doesn't have to be scary. It doesn't have to be dark. It can actually be something really positive, because even myself as a facilitator, there's things that I constantly learn about how I can better manage my mental health. And I'm no expert. And we say that to participants, is that you're your own expert in your mental health journey. We're here to facilitate a discussion around it. But really, we all come here with our own story. So I think a combination of the environment, but also setting that tone early on and just explaining to participants, you know, and empowering them and saying that you are kind of the expert in your mental health journey. We're here to provide some knowledge and education around some healthy strategies that might work for you, might not. That's for you to decide. And that really starts to lower that power imbalance. And I think it really allows participants to see you as, okay, cool. Mark has a skill set around mental health. He has some cool ideas that might work for me. But he's also a person, you know, he's someone that moved to Australia from Canada and he faces his own challenges as well. And there is a healthy and an unhealthy way to do that, I think, as a facilitator. And that's part of the training that we give our staff, is like, how do you use your own experience in a way that's going to empower participants in a way that's appropriate.
So a little bit of self-disclosure along the way, I guess.
Yeah. A bit of therapeutic use of self. And obviously that's a judgment call on the facilitator on what's appropriate and what kind of group they would do that with. But to circle back to your original question around like how do you break down those barriers of engagement, I think lowering that power dynamic helps. And having that time. So we're fortunate enough to have that time in a group setting with our participants, but we also have that time one-on-one in the water, where if you have a group member that is maybe disengaged, or maybe the group format isn't suitable for them, or they're not comfortable sharing in that format, we are then kind of one-on-one with them in the water. And we can actually check in with them a little bit more and use that as a time to dig a little bit deeper while you're trying to support them onto a wave and managing rips and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, we're at Waves of Wellness, we're fortunate because there's a few different ways that we can approach that.
And the therapeutic alliance, I guess it develops so naturally. I mean, in some ways, depending on you to help me not crash and burn on this wave, but there's a bonding that you're out in the ocean together and it must just sort of form, I guess, naturally as you're out there one-on-one with them.
Totally. And I think there's a degree of trust there as well, where as a participant, you know, they are trusting us as facilitators to provide that safe environment. And that's something that it aligns very, very well with what you would normally set up in terms of emotional safety within a group. And our facilitators have an opportunity in that first week when we're talking about boundary setting, we're talking about group rules, we're talking about goals and what participants want to achieve. We talk about their goals in terms of surfing first, because that's really easy and it gets them sharing and chatting about how they want to pop up and be able to turn and all this kind of stuff. And then we transition that very smoothly into, okay, cool, those are your goals for in the water. What about on the sand? What are some of the goals? What are some of the things you guys would like to talk about in terms of mental health? What are some of the challenges that you're facing outside of the water in your day-to-day, whether it's at school or at work? And what are some of the goals? But also, these are some of the things that I'm going to be doing to make sure that you guys are safe out in the water, but also safe in the group discussion topic. So we need to agree on some rules as a group to ensure that we're all going to feel safe with sharing certain things, or we're going to feel safe in understanding what someone's, you know, if there's certain trigger topics and how we're going to manage that. So with Waves of Wellness, we kind of pride ourselves in, we've developed a lot of similarities between group rules or even things to keep in mind in the water and how that also translates to mental health and the discussions that we have on the sand.
And they seem to kind of just fit perfectly together. Physical yeah. safety, emotional safety, goals for surfing, goals for life and wellness.
That's totally. And metaphors is something we use a lot of. So metaphors around, you know, the waves of the ocean are also much like the waves of your emotions. And we have a whole week where we talk about problem solving and rips and how that can be related and how sometimes when you're stuck in a rip, you need to put your hand up. And that can be the hardest thing to do is ask for help. Well, that's the case for our mental health as well. Sometimes when we don't have the skills to manage, we actually need to put our hand up and see a GP or see a counselor or a psychologist. And that sometimes can be challenging. So there's endless amounts of analogies and parallels. And our team, they do a great job at kind of tying those two worlds together.
You know, I noticed from the website that you guys offer services around grief and loss, which includes shark attacks. Can you talk a little bit about that?
That's right. So as you know, in Australia, we run our programs in the ocean. And one of the slight risks with being in the ocean is that it's also the shark's environment. So there was a situation earlier in the year where there was a student from a local high school who actually passed away as a result of a shark attack. And the school had reached out to us to run, it was a 6-week program with some of the students that were actually there with the student when he passed away, and some other students that were acquaintances or friends with him that were experiencing grief as a result of losing their friend. So we were able to provide a program that got those students back to the beach in a supportive, safe, and positive environment in the form of a Waves of Wellness program where they could kind of process some of that grief together and also get back in the water and have that as a positive experience rather than something that was quite anxiety provoking or traumatic.
And I think it's so amazing that you guys are customizing your programs to specific events, traumatic events, and that just kind of speaks to, I guess, the level of program delivery that you guys offer, which is, that's phenomenal.
That's right. So with Waves of Wellness, like all of our facilitators have such a unique opportunity as clinicians to work with a range of demographics from, you know, we have grief and loss programs, we have youth trauma programs. It really is a range, and you get that very rich, diverse experience. We've done also a bushfire response program early on in 2020. We had a range of Australian bushfires, and we worked with a community that a lot of people lost their homes and things that they cherished to the bushfires, and they actually were evacuated to the beach when the fires came in. So that beach environment became a bit of a negative space. We could come to that community, work with them, and almost reclaim the beach and have it as a positive space through the work we did with them. So yeah, range of different programs at WOW.
That's so cool. I love the idea of reclaiming the beach too. I think that's it.
But at WOW we have, it's, if you've checked out the website, you would have seen, we have about 16, 18 different types of programs. So we work across the board, anyone as young as 12 can access our groups. And we do, adult mental health. We do youth trauma programs. We work with veterans and first responders that have PTSD. So we really work across the board in terms of the services we provide. And it's a great amount of variety.
That's awesome. And can we talk a little bit about more about group work? Because I think it's, you know, from what I remember in school, it was covered, but it wasn't, I guess it's sort of undervalued, I think, group therapy, group work. But the research is amazing and the benefits are incredible. And especially when you aren't able to offer individual therapy or counseling, it's such a great way of delivering services. But I don't think it's talked about enough. So can you just kind of talk a little bit about some of the activities or some of the interventions that you guys would do in a group setting?
Yeah, totally. So, you got me thinking back to the MSW days now. We, for us at Waves of Wellness, I think the benefit of group work is you have that added element of social connection, and you have that, I guess, added element of a group identity or a sense of almost a shared struggle and normalization around challenges with mental health. And one of the outcomes that we've found with our program specifically is the real benefit that a lot of our participants are getting is that social connection. And whether that's because the surfing element or it's just a natural element of group work and sharing that sense of shared challenges, social connection is a big benefit of group work. Now, in terms of the interventions that we're delivering, our program is largely CBT based with some principles of ACT and incorporating a number of mindfulness based activities. So with surf therapy specifically, there's a lot of research around flow state and that how that relates to mindfulness. And it's essentially being in the present moment, not ruminating about the past or being anxious about the future. When you're surfing, you are able to enter into that flow state. We combine that with mindfulness-based activities on the sand, whether that be a guided body scan for 15 minutes, or we do something called sand dripping where you work with wet sand and you have that very like tactile experience. Those types of activities vary depending on the needs of the groups and who we're working with. For example, if we know we're working with veterans or first responders that experience PTSD, there's more of a focus on those mindfulness-based activities and arousal management. If we're doing more of a youth program, we may focus more on psychoeducation and providing more general mental health literacy around things participants can do to better manage their mental health. We have a gamut of different activities that depend on the group. Because we did touch on mindfulness, I'll chat about one that I think is a favorite with all of our facilitators, where we actually make a floating raft out in the water. So we'll go beyond the breaking waves. We'll make a floating raft with all of the surfboards. We'll have all the participants lay on their backs and we'll talk them through that guided mindfulness, listening to the waves or just feeling the temperature of the water on the tip of your toes. And that is a bit of an outside of the box activity that we do, but something that all of our participants love. But following that, we also identify the fact that, look, mindfulness is something that is really challenging. Who had challenges with actually maintaining an open mind during this exercise? What were the things that started to distract you guys? Was it the plane that flew over above, or was it the sound of people at the beach? And again, normalizing the struggles and identifying that it's okay to have challenges with this. It's your brain is just like any other muscle in your body. It takes time to work out. So that's kind of one activity that we would look at. We might also do like the box breathing in the sand, where they can actually draw in the sand, and chat through the box breathing activity. But it's, there is a range of different ones. If we have a youth program, we might draw in the sand like almost a wave where it goes up and down. And we might ask participants to just identify where you're coming to the group today. Like, are you feeling like you're on the top of your wave? Are you feeling maybe like you're a bit at the bottom? Are you somewhere around the middle? And why is that? If we have groups that are a bit more open to chatting. Maybe it's an adult mental health program. We'll talk specifically about identifying emotions and incorporating more of a CBT-based approach where, all right, that's cool. How are those emotions contributing to how you're feeling on the day-to-day? And how are those feelings impacting the choices you're making? So again, the word is variety. we work with such a range of different programs. We do have a variety of different approaches that we use. And it really is about tailoring it to the participants we have at the group.
That's amazing. Well, the metaphors are never ending, and the job, I mean, work doing this work sounds phenomenal. Getting to, you know, guide people through this, be in the water, be on the sand. Let's talk about your role now as program manager. I guess you're sort of more in the office now, but you're developing some of these groups, or what's your position look like now?
So right now, my position it's evolved over the years. Right now it's a heavy focus on supporting our facilitators and delivering effective programs. Because we've grown to 11 facilitators around Australia now at different program sites, a large part of my role is supporting them and making sure that they have the skills and ability to deliver safe and effective programs. My time is then also split between actually looking at our program schedule. So we deliver about every quarter, we deliver about 20 programs across the country. So throughout a year, that's what, 2, 4, 6, it's about 80 programs throughout a year. So liaising with some of our program partners, looking at how we can leverage grants to actually fund these programs, working with right now, a large part of my time is actually taken up with data migration. So we're looking at the development of a tech platform where we're going to be integrating Salesforce and migrating all of our old participant data into this new system. So it really evolves quite a bit. There is an element of my role as well that looks at program development and how can we update our program manuals or incorporate new activities or exercises that are going to support our participants at programs. And then some of my role is just the logistics around we need to re-register our van or, you know, we need to order new rashies or wetsuits or whatever that is. So it's kind of split between a number of different places.
Yeah, that's great. And I guess the big component is this is a not-for-profit. So there's always looking for donations and grants, and that's a whole kind of job on its own.
Totally. And that's one of the challenges with a non-for-profit is that you're always strapped on resources. So it's really tested my ability to, I guess, think outside the box or try and be as resourceful as possible with the resources that we do have, but also learn about how, as a social worker, we can really advocate for the work that we are doing and say that this does have value. Whether it's in a grant application or, you know, our CEO does a number of workplace presentations, but really trying to think about how can we make this sustainable? How can we show people that this is something that works? We know it's something that works because we hear the stories all the time, but there is more and more of a focus around data collection. And if you haven't checked it out already, I'd suggest checking out. It's an organization called ISTO, International Surf Therapy Org. And they are a international governing body around surf therapy, which Waves of Wellness was fortunate enough to be one of the founding members of that, because we're not the only ones delivering surf therapy. There's over 40 organizations around the world that are doing some kind of therapy using surfing.
Wow. Actually, I saw a guy surfing in Sarnia a couple weeks ago.
No way.
Maybe we could start a chapter here.
Oh, well, I've been paying attention to Surf the Greats and what those guys are doing. And I don't know, like I got into kiteboarding on the lakes and had the whole 5 mil wetsuit and hoods and gloves and booties, and I just I couldn't do it. It was too cold.
Doesn't seem as enjoyable as how you describe, you know, life on Bondi Beach and, you know, just the sun and heat.
It's different. It's a different feel, but mad respect for those guys that get out there. If it's Lake Erie or Lake Ontario, wherever they're at, they're frothers. You could say they're keen beans, and they're good on them. It's great.
Yeah, I do miss. Has really picked up here.
Yeah, I've heard from some friends that there's more and more people on the lakes every summer. But even with that, like, we get the strongest winds in fall and spring, really. So you do have to put up with the cold weather. We're here. My fiance and I, she's a kite surfer as well. So we were out on the weekend and it was like 25 degrees and warm and windy. So I was pretty happy with that. Although I do miss the ice hockey. I miss the Leafs. I miss chatting to friends about hockey, and I was able to find a league here that I play in, but it took a bit of time to track that down.
That's awesome. Right on. I guess part of me is like thinking about quitting my job and moving to Australia to come work with you, but
you have to come visit, Matt.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm sure people that are listening might be feeling the same way. What is the hiring process? Like, what type of, are you guys hiring? I guess there's other organizations that are doing surf therapy as well, but I think people might be curious about what are the qualifications you're looking for? How do I become a facilitator? You know, what does that process look like?
Yeah, great question. So our team at the moment, we have our full-time team consists of our CEO, myself, and we've hired a national partnerships manager. So it's three full-time. And then our facilitators that are stationed at different beaches across this country are on a casual basis. So they normally work about 2 days a week, and they are trained. We have different models at different locations. So at our, what we call our hub sites or our big major city locations, our facilitators are allied health professionals. So social work, OT, counseling, psychology backgrounds. We even have some mental health nurses as well that we've employed. And they're also surf instructors. So you have to display that you have at least an intermediate level of surfing, meaning you can catch a wave, you can turn on a wave, and you have that ocean safety knowledge. At our smaller locations, we run a different model where it's a casual employment kind of basis. We look to employ an allied health professional. But we actually partner with a local surf school that then provides the surfing component, just because the smaller, more rural program site, it's a bit more challenging to find someone that has both the surfing ability and the clinical background.
That's a really unique skill set to have both.
It's very niche. Yeah, it's very niche. But that's our team. That's what we call our WOW family. And it's been really cool to see Waves of Wellness grow over the last 3 years that I've been involved with it. And at each program site, we have a van with all of our equipment, and it's been quite the journey.
Right on. That's so cool.
I love some of the guests you've had on, Matt. Like I think it was it Brenly? She was a performance coach with. Yeah, Arizona Coyotes. That was really interesting stuff.
Yeah, she's brilliant, and she's doing some amazing things in the NHL, and she's from Ontario too. She's from Toronto.
So cool.
Yeah.
It's really neat.
So I usually ask two questions to everybody. And the first one, and I want to ask them to you too. And I think I can probably imagine what you're going to say to this question, but what do you do to prevent, manage, mitigate burnout and vicarious trauma?
Great question. I think I'm reflecting back on like my early days and really just getting my hands dirty with social work. I think naturally there's a tendency to want to link client outcomes with what you're doing or providing. And I think that can go both ways, right? So when you have, when you're working with a client and they have some, maybe they've made some amazing progress or they've had some really positive changes, you may have a tendency to want to attribute that to the work that you're doing with them. And on the flip side of that, if you're working with clients and maybe you're finding that, you know, they're not making progress or you're feeling like they're constantly unwell, you may also attribute that to the work that you're doing with them. I think learning early on that you need to have pretty strict boundaries around our role as a social worker in whatever capacity we're working with individuals is we want to provide a service and we want to empower them to make positive choices in their life. And regardless of the choices that they choose to make, we need to feel good at the end of the day about the support or the guidance or whatever the work is that we're doing with them. We need to feel good about what we've provided them. And I think trying not to link your professional success with client outcomes is an important thing to keep in mind. And also just having strict boundaries around work time and personal time. And understanding when I'm acting as like Mark, the social worker, and when I'm just Mark after work, being able to catch up with some mates and have a laugh or whatever it is. Having strict boundaries around that is important. Is probably what I would say. But also touching on boundaries, just being really upfront with whether you're facilitating a group or you're working one-on-one with someone, being very upfront and transparent about the support you provide and what your role is in the work that you'll be doing with them, but also what their role is. And being transparent around that from the first instance.
That's great advice. I love that. Nobody's ever really mentioned that, you know, the looking at outcomes and having some separation. So I think that's excellent. 'Cause you're right. We do tend to, client does well, it's like, oh, I'm doing a great job, and client's not doing well, it's again, a reflection on me. So yeah. I love it. And
that's not something I came up with. That was a supervisor. So they instilled that with me early on. And that's something that I think always stuck with me. And, you know, I think social work can be, it's a great profession. Like, I think, you know, there is a high amount of burnout and we need to be mindful of doing things to prevent that and kind of practicing what we preach a lot of the time. But I think it's a really noble profession where you can make a living of around helping other people. And at the end of the day, if you can feel good about what you're doing at your 9 to 5, it bleeds into other elements of your life.
So true.
Mm.
And it may even find yourself living near a beach in Australia along the way.
That's right. That's right. Although I don't know, I've been here 7 years now, so you do really start to miss some of the little things about Canada that you maybe you don't recognize, whether it's the Timbits at Tim Hortons or having snow on Christmas, you know, those little things that I find I do miss from time to time, but there's always trips back home to help with that.
Yeah. And I guess I was curious because, and I know everyone's kind of sick of hearing about the pandemic, but you guys are really in a good position now. Is that the case after doing a lockdown and things are looking pretty good for you on that front?
Yeah, things are looking quite good here. I know speaking with my family in Windsor, it's not doing so great at the moment. There's much more stricter lockdown rules. It's interesting here, like a lot of the governance comes from the state government here. So they open and close state borders based on how many cases there are in different cities. They also have a mandatory, what they call a hotel quarantine, where if you're arriving into Australia from overseas, you have to quarantine for 2 weeks in a hotel, and it's mandatory. So you go in a bus from the airport right to a hotel for 2 weeks. I think that system has helped them quite a bit keep cases under control, but yeah, it's generally speaking, it's been fairly, fairly controlled here. That being said, even with our waves of wellness groups, we've had COVID safe procedures we've had to put in place where we do temperature checks with participants that arrive at the group. We do hand sanitizer. They wear masks during the discussion topic. So it's really changed. It's changed the way we do things. It's changed the world over the last year. And for me personally, it's hard not being able to come home and see family and you know, just have those telephone calls or Skypes with grandparents, but not being able to see them is challenging.
No doubt. When was the last time you were able to get home?
I was home in November of 2019.
So yeah, you're in 3-4 months. That's a long time. Yeah. So, yeah. And do you guys have to wear masks out in the water too, or just during discussion?
No, it was just during the discussions where we had them. They have a physical distancing rule here of 1.5 meters is the suggested distance. So when you can't maintain that, the government has suggested that you wear a mask. It was not a mandatory thing, but it was suggested.
Okay. Wow.
Because you were mandatory mask wearing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At some point.
And I guess if there's medical exemptions and things like that, but I think most places you're required to wear a mask at this point. And I just remember watching the news and seeing Australia, like, armed forces and things like enforcing the lockdown. And it seemed like you guys went really heavy on it, but then there's been great results, it sounds like. And New Zealand looks like they're in a good spot right now too.
Yeah, that's right. New Zealand's doing really well. They actually opened a travel bubble where for a bit of time you could travel New Zealand to Australia because of just the status of COVID in each of the countries. But yeah, from what I've heard from the family, I think we're pretty fortunate to be doing all right at the moment here.
Yeah, it's nice to have your brother there, I guess, and some family.
Yeah. Yeah, so he's working down in Melbourne as a school teacher.
Nice. Right. Yeah. I love Melbourne. that's when when I came in 2009, we flew into Melbourne. We bought a van, lived in a van for 3 months and drove up the East Coast. And then we ended up getting a place in Surfers Paradise for a little while. We got jobs and just kind of lived the dream for 8 months. And then we went to Thailand for a month and had some great adventures there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I have pretty fond memories of Australia.
That's great, Matt. What'd you think of the coffee?
The coffee?
In Australia.
I don't know if I really was in, I was in my early 20s and I don't think I really drank coffee then.
Oh, okay. Because they do, coffee here is so different than back home.
Is it?
Like, it's very much a specialty, almost like they make it almost like a European coffee. Okay. But I learned pretty early on, you can't walk into a coffee shop and order like a regular or a just a black coffee. They look at you like you're crazy.
I feel like all I was drinking back then was Goon.
Oh, no. That's not good.
We were traveling on a shoestring budget, so.
That's hilarious.
But yeah. So I have one last question for you.
Go for it.
What advice or tips would you give to new social workers, new mental health practitioners, people that are just starting to get out into the field?
I would say get your hands dirty. Like, social work is, it's a profession with so much variety. There's so many different different paths you can take as a social worker, whether you're working in mental health, whether you're working with the elderly or you're working in child protection. Like, try different things to find out what you like and what you don't like, because there is so much variety out there. Get your hands dirty, try things. Don't be too hard on yourself. Like, speak with people that are doing things that interest you. Like, that's essentially what I've done. And find your niche, like whatever that is within social work, like whether it's one-on-one clinical counseling, whether it's group work or child protection. Like, yeah, speak with the others that are doing what interests you, and ask questions and just have that. I think that growth mindset is the only thing that comes to mind. So I think with social work, life experience and workplace experience is really valuable. And I think that's why with BSW and MSW programs, there's such a heavy weight on placements. I know that I had a range of different placements. Some I really enjoyed, some I really hated. And that was a really easy way for me to figure out, no, this isn't for me.
Mm. Great, great advice. And I guess you've already mentioned this, but don't be afraid to knock on doors.
That's right. Put yourself out there. Trust your instincts and be open to learning, whether it's learning from the people you work with or supervisors or coworkers. I think those relationships are super important. And there's so much information out there. It's impossible for you to know everything. So learn from others.
Oh, that's so good, Mark. I appreciate you taking this time. And I, you know, again, I just think it's so cool that you know, this was part of your learning in grad school and then just really living what you kind of knew back then, and you followed your dreams and took you to Australia and just kept going. So I think that's something to be really proud of. And it's nice to be able to share this with listeners and for, you know, new social workers out there that, you know, it can be really discouraging trying to get out and find the job and feel the pressure. And so you're kind of the poster boy for dream it and believe it and then do it.
I don't know about that, but I would be open to chatting with anyone that maybe is thinking about whether it's a move to another country or just social work as a career. I'm always happy to chat about that and advocate for it, because I think sometimes, even when I, like as a young social worker, I think the stigma or the view of the profession is, oh, you're not going to earn good money and you're just going to get burnt out. So why do you want to go down that road? But there really is so much more to it. And I would encourage anyone that's studying social work, even like go for the MSW. I really was very on the fence about it. If I didn't have my MSW, I actually wouldn't be able to stay in Australia. So you never know where or when that extra education might come and benefit you. So yeah, I'd encourage anyone to explore that.
Nice. So, and if people do want to reach out, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
I would say LinkedIn is probably going to be the easiest way for this kind of stuff. Just Mark Maselli on LinkedIn. I don't know if you share links or anything with the
I'll put that up for sure.
But happy to share that. Just message me and we can have a bit of a chat.
Sounds good. You're going to get a wave of resumes.
Well, with your podcast blowing up, Matt, you probably. But I'd love to stay in touch with you as well, Matt. And
well, I'm coming to visit at some. Yeah. So
let's make it happen. You can come check out a program and get a surf lesson while you're at it.
I'm in for sure. And you're in Sydney, right?
I am.
Okay.
So I'm in what's considered South Sydney.
Okay. Right on. And did you say you're at Bondi Beach? Is that where you do your, like the groups that you guys run?
Yeah, that's one of our many different program sites.
Yeah.
In Sydney, where Bondi is our Eastern Beaches location, then we have programs on the Northern Beaches as well. And then programs around Melbourne, actually in an artificial wave pool, which has just opened up. So we're running groups in it's actually a wave pool where you're surfing, not at the beach, but in a pool, which is a bit of a first. So that should be cool.
Right on. That's so cool. Well, thanks again, Mark. It's been so good talking to you.
No, thanks for having me. And yeah, love the podcast, love what you're doing, and we'll keep listening and looking forward to keeping in touch.